Welcome to Dithering on the Edge of Europe, the podcast about what it feels like to be European and live in the UK. I'm Carola Böhm.
And I'm Richard McCarthy.
Right. We're days before the election.
Yep. That's right.
But so we thought we're just going to do a quick how do you feel kind of session. What would happen if we would wake up on 13th?
Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th. Oh, I didn't realize.
It's a nightmare, right?
Oh, gosh. Okay. And of course, that has everything to do with what this podcast is about, Dithering on the Edge of Europe, because, you know, each of those parties has put forward a specific stance in relation to Europe. So we're going to tackle that.
Okay.
So let's start with the dystopia first. How would you feel if we wake up Friday the 13th and Boris Johnson has been successful with the Tories gaining the majority?
Well, I think the first thing is I'll be exhausted anyway. I won't be waking up on Friday the 13th. I'll just still be awake, expect, because I'll be at the count. But if Boris Johnson is Prime Minister, that would be awful. It really will. Because he's all about, you know, he's about changing everything to give power to the Conservatives, power to the ruling elite.
Yeah, I was listening to a Navarra Media podcast actually this morning, and they mentioned something which really struck with me, and, you know, can't get out of my head, this notion that to understand the behaviours of the Tories is to understand them not as the party for capitalism, but the party for and of the ruling class.
Yeah, that's always been the case.
Yes, maybe as a German, you know, I'm just, you know, because in Germany we never had that type of, in my living memory, that type of class system. And but, you know, as we talked before, that's still very visceral in England. It's still there. You can feel it. And of course, when we moved down from Scotland to England, I could tell, you know, there was such a thing as a class system.
And I think, maybe it's been the case that Labour has historically worked against capitalism, and New Labour may be considered to have been something trying to embrace capitalism for the sake of Labour, if you see what I mean. But
if the Tories get in majority, nightmare, I also would think, oh my God, can this country take another 5 years of, you know, that kind of austerity, that kind of privileging the elite, the rich? Can we still take that? Because it's already been run down so much. So, you know, from my perspective, and of course, as a German, you know, one of the big things is if the Tories get in, they will very quickly do another vote in regards to the withdrawal agreement bill. They bring it back to Parliament before Christmas, and we will leave the EU in January.
Yeah, because they're such a democratic party, they've made sure that every single one of their candidates supports their Boris Johnson's leave bill, even though nobody knows what it entails, because he wouldn't allow people to properly read through it. You know, he tried to push it through Parliament in 3 days, something that, you know, people have been thinking about or trying to think about for 3.5 years and not getting very far, but it was all going to be solved in 3 days. And he will try and push it through before Christmas. And he'll use the same sort of stuff that he's used before. But this time he'll be using it on a lot of people who will be brand new members of Parliament who've already pledged to support him in this bill, because otherwise they couldn't stand. So, yeah, he would then get it through.
So that means in this dystopian near future,
we would leave.
We would leave by January. Are there any glimmers of hope? You know, we've had one of the biggest pro-European demonstrations in living memory. You know, we've got now the biggest expression of pro-European sentiment in the European Union here in Britain.
Yeah, it hasn't bothered the Conservatives yet, has it?
No, but
so
would there be a lot
of resistance?
Yeah.
Well, there'd be a lot of people. Yeah, of course, there'd be a huge number of people objecting to it, because more of the population object to leaving the EU than the population who want to go in.
Yeah.
And that's always been the case. It was only, I think I realized a better analogy this week of the whole Brexit vote. And that was, if you have a club of 100 people and somebody says, why don't we leave this clubhouse? And then you have a vote on it. 37 people out of the 100 said, yeah, well, I want to leave. 35 said, no, we want to stay here. And 28 people said, no, I don't really know. And they're using that vote to then leave the clubhouse. And I think if you put it that way, people would say only 37 out of 100 saying that we actually want to leave the clubhouse, but we're leaving the clubhouse where we're all set up. We can play our sports or whatever it is from here. But because 37 people out of 100 said leave, we're leaving. That just seems ridiculous. What you'd do is you'd discuss it more maybe and maybe have another vote somewhere further down the line. But those 37 people don't want to have the vote just because they're in power. They're pushing everything through. It's ridiculous.
So taking that we would go in this dystopian future, we would leave the European Union, there are sort of two theories what would happen in the medium term, you know, in terms of the resistance to this anti-European movement or the strength of a pro-European movement. One theory is that immediately there would be a rejoin campaign.
Yeah.
And that might happen certainly in the immediate future. So, you know, for this podcast, there's still a need for that. So that's the good news. The other theory is that because, of course, then the next 5 years might be busy doing trade agreements, and the trade agreements are conflict-rich environments with the media still against Europe. The sort of adversarial nature of trade agreements might be that it's going to be very adversarial.
I think it's going to be a lot worse than adversarial because so far we haven't actually left. And the anger felt by people will be much greater when we have left. And still we'll be in this middle ground of we'll have left, but in actual fact we won't have left because we'll still be trading for a year with Europe in the same way. So we won't feel the pain.
Are you saying the anger towards Europe or the anger towards the government taking us out of Europe?
Definitely the anger towards the government taking us out. I think so far, a lot of anger has been stoked up by people who maybe voted to leave, who feel that we haven't left. So they're angry about that. And I can understand their anger in a way, but they don't understand the anger of the people who voted to remain because what I just talked about, the analogy where a minority is saying we need to leave. And so apparently we're leaving. And that's just wrong in my book. Sure, a minority are saying definitely to stay, or that's what happened 3.5 years ago, which is why we keep saying, well, we need another vote about it. But it should be that if we are going to change the status quo, then more than 50% should vote in a certain direction. And that's not just more than 50% of the actual voters. That's not a majority, as the analogy with the club shows. So it should be more than half the people actually want to go, not more than half the voters want to go or anything like that. Because otherwise, there's no point.
Yeah.
You know, you're changing something that people don't want to be changed.
Yeah. And that still points towards there will be a very, very strong rejoin contingent or community. Yeah, I think that's not going to go away. And the government might have the next 5 years of creating a real mess of our health services, of our, you know, public services, and they will create that mess.
Yeah,
but I think actually, if you think about the generational developments, there's an increasing number of young people who are actually basing their decision making on facts and evidence. And the facts and evidence speaks for itself. So we don't even have to talk about the left and the right. We can actually talk about reason and, you know, skullduggering untruths.
Well, we face a terrible thing in a way because the Conservatives have got some pretense of looking after the country because they've copied things from other people's manifestos, basically, if you ask me. Theirs was the last manifesto out, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
Other than the DUP or something like that. And
it's very short.
And it's very short. And
not much substance.
They just put a bunch of ideas, threw in a bunch of ideas from other parties and cobbled it together that way, it seems. They have no funding for their ideas. They promised tax cuts for everybody in society, not just promised tax cuts for those at the top, tax cuts for those at the bottom, tax cuts for those in the middle, I think, somewhere.
And they're still
expending quite a lot more money, but they're not doing anything with it. They say that they will, they'd only build with it, but they're not building. They're employing more policemen and women. to get up to what they the levels that were around in 2010. Yeah. They're employing more nurses to get up with the levels that they used to be, et cetera, et cetera. And it's, you know, but they're not changing the environment for those nurses. And that means that we'll lose nurses just as quickly anyway. And, you know, so we will be losing money hand over fist. We've lost, we've £800 billion. We are more in debt now than when the Conservatives originally came into power.
And of course, again, our mainstream media is not actually holding the lead, you know, the Conservatives to account in relation to asking about the content and the substance of their policies, which is a bit of a shame, you know, because in some ways, you know, I just don't get it, because there's also this other issue, which is really worrying, that if the Conservatives get in power, I see actually a lack of quality of leadership within the Conservative Party. And so we're being led, you know, our country will be led by simply elitist views without the intelligence and intellect of what good leadership of a whole country actually needs to look like.
Yes.
So let's change that image. Friday the 13th, and let's say Labour had won a majority.
Yeah. Okay.
So we wake up, well, after long night.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be a little bit better. Obviously, it's
so you're not overjoyed.
No, it's better because it's not the Conservatives, but you know, and Labour will do a lot of hopefully good things, but Labour will not address the climate change in the way that they need to be. They're spending a lot less than we would be on their New Deal, which means I assume that they would build a lot less.
Sorry, they're spending a lot more less than the Greens.
Yeah. I know that they wouldn't insulate homes to the level that the homes could then be heated by electricity rather than gas and coal and stuff like that. So they're not planning on changing heating systems, which means that those means of producing carbon dioxide would still be there.
Yeah.
Which the Green Party would be removing from homes.
Yeah, and of course that points towards the basic tension of, I guess, the red-green kind of question, you know, labor, environmental issues, mm-hmm. of what comes first. Does, you know, the society come first, or does the environment come first as human beings?
No, we wouldn't. They have to go hand in hand, because you can't change the CO2 emissions and so on without changing society. We can't get by. If we just switch to renewable energy everywhere, and had society, our society, being as profligate as it is, we'd still have enormous CO2 emissions because we import so much from other countries.
Okay.
So I think our import CO2 emissions are 56% of our CO2 emissions that we create just being here. So that's an enormous amount of CO2.
Yeah.
And we've got to get rid of that as well.
For me, the biggest negative, and I will celebrate if Labour gets in, you know, I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, I'm a Green Party member, but I will celebrate.
Yeah, when it's going to be a lot
Labour
better
gets
than
in, because we've just averted complete calamity. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing which I find is the biggest weakness is that they haven't openly supported proportional representation.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean about societal change, you know.
Yeah.
They've never supported that, unfortunately. So I don't see how they're going to create a society where people feel like their vote matters and what they think matters and so on. And the Green Party would be rebuilding society from the ground upwards. So.
And it was telling, and again, you know, I would celebrate if Labour gets in, but what was telling was Corbyn's reaction on the Scottish independence issue. He's very firm that a Labour-run country would benefit the Scottish people. And I would have phrased it slightly differently, something about autonomy and a devolved state. I would have talked about a devolution and federal states.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, what worked so well in Germany is that, you know, not down to Germans, it was actually the Allied forces who created a federalized system, decentralizing it to federal state. And I think that has been one of the underpinning structures that allowed Germany to do so well in the post-war period. And I think we need that in Britain as well. So when you talk about independence of Northern Ireland or Scotland, I would talk about that rather than, you know, just simply saying, no, you know, it's going to be good for the Scottish people, you know, to stay in the union, because it's not as obvious as that. At the moment, I would say I would be for Scottish independence because it's certainly not good for the Scottish people to stay in the union.
Basically, he's pandering to the English. So
right.
He doesn't want to say that he would be for Scottish independence because that's breaking up the union. And if you're English and you perceive the union as being a great thing, if you perceive the link up of England and Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland to be a good thing, then you you want to keep that going. You're not realizing that the Scottish have been under the yoke of the English view, if you see what I mean.
Decades.
Forever. For Scotland, they've always held a much more left-wing viewpoint than England. And they've always been dominated by a government largely elected by the English. And they've never had the government in Westminster that they want. And he's not admitting that, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. And so if Labour gets in, we are not going to drop out of the European Union in January 2020, but there will be another negotiation of a very soft Brexit.
Yeah.
A soft Brexit that includes aligning ourselves to the single market and also, more importantly, maintaining workers' rights.
The slight problem with the Labour idea is, you know, that I think the European Union is embarking on a new financial time frame in June, I think. So I think they would really like this to be over and done with by June. That only gives us 6 months in order to renegotiate and have our
referendum. Yeah.
So it's very, 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 very tight. So from that perspective, it's going to be difficult. I can see that where the Labour coming from with that idea, but we might run out of time in that respect.
But no deal is ruled out, which is a good thing.
Yeah,
which, of course, under the Conservatives, it's not.
What I would like to see them to happen is to change the idea that if we run out of time, then we just stay in rather than we drop out, which is what it is at the moment.
Yes, exactly. Right, so what is your ideal situation? Let's say fantasy land, complete, irrelevant of any kind of realities. We wake up and?
Real fantasy land would be we wake up and, I don't know, 70% of seats are green. Sean Berry and Jonathan Bartley
will be
joint prime minister.
Sorry, I forgot again the British system. We, of course, the party leaders are the, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that would be great. And we could start straight away looking at ways to get rid of carbon dioxide, basically.
Yeah. Proportional representation is in the manifesto.
Mm-hmm. And local determination. So local communities would be deciding for themselves what kind of building goes on, what kind of energy production they would like to see in their area, what kind of farming would be going on, what kind of transport you'd have, how the public transport is organised.
Real devolvement.
Yep, exactly. And we'd see with the devolvement, money and resources goes out to all those places that are just being starved of all those things at the moment.
Yeah, it goes out to the regions, yeah. There would be an immense shift of how we do things. You know, just thinking about the education sector, for instance. How do you devolve a system which has, over the last decades, been so centralised?
Mm. And it would be quite painful, I think. You know, for me, I hate going to political things, you know, to meetings. I don't enjoy going to meetings at all, generally, in the evenings and things like that. But there's going to be an awful lot more meetings that people are going to have to go to, which is entirely a good thing. Because if you don't go to meetings, if you don't read up on stuff, if you're not aware of things, then you can't take part in the decision making. And I think there are a lot of people who are much better than me, in actual fact, but who haven't had the opportunity to go to the meetings. But if they got the chance to go to the meetings, then they would be like really fired up about it. They'd love it. They'd go for it. But in the past, it's been the people for whom the decisions have been made have been the people with wealth. And that's why they go to the meetings and they make those decisions and so on. So this would be a reverse of that.
And we assume that if the Greens would be voted in by 70% of the votes, that there would be a real groundswell of support. Because I think one of the most difficult things in terms of devolving that kind of power and decision making is how do you take everyone with you? Mm. And we know that, you know, just comparing the processes around the Labour Party with the Conservatives, you know, the Labour Party has always been said, oh, they can't make decisions. Oh, they, you know, he doesn't know what he's wanting. But actually, the democratic processes often slow decision making down and speed up implementation, because once you've made a decision, then everyone is on board and you can just simply implement it. Whereas if you have a top-down sort of decision-making process where the leader can just simply make a decision, then you still have to do the work in getting everyone on board in order not to undermine the implementation. Mm-hmm. So decision-making is slower in democratic organizations, but implementation is faster once you've got the buy-in. But I think that is going to be quite a painful process as well, because there will be also a lot of resistance to quite radical new green ways of thinking about the economy, ways of thinking about society.
Yeah, there may be. But I mean, if it was 70% Greens, then there wouldn't be, because there wouldn't be the MPs around to be trying to be blocking it and so on. But like we said, that was fantasy land, so it's not unlikely to happen. But
yes, if that 70% is out there.
Yeah, absolutely. But the bigger reason why I'd want there to be a Green majority or a really sizable Green number of MPs in Parliament is because if it were a Labour majority, I fear that we would spend a lot of money, but we'd spend a lot of money, but we wouldn't get the CO2 emissions that we would get if we were with a Green party. And then come the end of the Parliament, lots of people would just go, you spent loads of money, we haven't done anything, we're not going to do that again. We're going to go for some kind of austerity type conservative idea. And then we really are completely scuppered. So in that sense, you know, there's a worry that this is it. And there's a worry that this is it and we haven't done it.
And this is the climate election.
This is the climate election. So, but if Labour do get in, then we have to do an enormous amount of work. The Green Party and Green individuals have to do an enormous amount of work to change the viewpoints of people within Labour to say, no, a Manchester airport, you know, expanding airports is not a good idea. Just don't do it. Building more roads, not a good idea. Just stop it. Don't do those. You know, HS2 is a terrible idea. It's constructively impossible, to be honest. Do not do it. So there's a whole bunch of things that you can make the planet a lot better place just by not doing some things. And Labour don't seem to have cottoned onto that entirely yet. Maybe some Labour, I'm sure some Labour activists will have done, but the Labour leadership, you know, they're busy with a lot of other stuff, I'm sure. But
yeah. And as you just mentioned, HS2, so Labour in their manifesto is actually supporting HS2.
Exactly, yeah. Which I went to a demonstration last week of how that is virtually impossible in Cheshire, on the Cheshire Plain. It's bound to fail in Cheshire. But by the time they get to Cheshire, they'll have already destroyed 106 ancient woodlands. So,
yeah.
Because they're starting from London upwards once again.
Yeah. And as we said before, you know, coming from a German perspective, you know, initially when the HS2 project was started, I was actually quite for that, because we do need to invest in our infrastructure, in our railway infrastructure. But HS2 is just not the way, because it's one big project. I think we need continued investment in our existing infrastructure
all over the nation, rather than
you know, one main artery, and that's the investment for the next 50 years. You know, we need continued investment in that. And also, as I've always said before, you know, even if you were for HS2, we actually need HS3 before we need HS2. So we need to connect the northern cities and towns before we actually connect everything to London.
Mm. And
we are already connected to London.
And there's a lot of work that needs to be done in Scotland and Wales.
Exactly.
Before you start, you know, before England, perhaps as well.
Yeah. Right. And of course, one of the tasks will be, how do we set up our political frameworks that the changes that we put in place cannot be undone the next time, for instance, the Conservatives get in. And one of the key elements to that, as we said before, is to get rid of the first past the post system and put in proportional representation. So I think, you know, if, for instance, Labour gets in and the Greens don't get in, I think there needs to be a big campaign for introducing proportional representation, because only then can you be confident that any kind of social underpinning infrastructure that you put in is not being undermined the next time, you know, the next party gets in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So the fourth scenario.
So the fourth scenario would be a hung parliament. And yeah, no party has an overall majority. But under present laws, of course, you can rule, you can be a minority government for 5 years if you so wish. And I think Corbyn, like Theresa May, has the doggedness to just keep going with that sort of thing. So
in terms of a hung parliament, what would happen in terms of...
I don't know. In terms of Europe, I think they would have to have... It would depend on numbers, but I'm presuming that a hung parliament would be Labour... Oh, well... It depends what variety of hung parliament we get, because we might get a hung parliament where Conservatives have the majority but can't form an absolute government. So there'd be a lot of dithering around over whether they could form a government, and then they wouldn't. And then Labour would dither around and try and form a government and maybe won't. They would get the SNP going with Labour, I think. Whether that would also not quite make 50%, I don't know. But if it did... then I suppose that would be a speedier thing. And SNP are definitely for us remaining in Europe.
So that would be, you know, and there would be hard negotiation, but I assume the Labour policy would win out, you know, put another agreed soft Brexit in front of a referendum.
But there would also have to be another referendum in Scotland.
Absolutely.
Before the referendum in England.
I don't think so, no.
Well, it depends when that referendum might occur, because...
Well, as you said before, you know, the European referendum has to happen within the next 6 months because of European budgets.
Yeah. And
the Scottish referendum could be negotiated. That could be afterwards, depending on the European referendum.
Yeah, the SNP said they wanted it. They definitely wanted it in 2020. They definitely want, and they seemingly they want to have it before we leave. I think they want to have it before we leave, because if we do leave. And they want it that way, because then they can come out as a separate country and they can say, look, we are members of the European Union. Please take us in. And then I think the European Union would look on that more favourably than looking on a country that's been taken out of the European Union first.
So basically what you're saying...
A lot more political activity if there's a hung parliament.
It's a mess if it's a hung parliament. The mess will continue if it's a hung parliament.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which just shows, if it's a hung parliament, we need proportional representation.
Yeah, which shows
more than ever before.
Yeah, if we'd had proportional representation in the first place, this wouldn't have happened. So,
yes,
yeah, absolutely. And a hung parliament with proportional representation is okay. It's you know, occasionally there's problems with it, but so what? There's massive problems if you don't have proportional representation.
Right. So the hung parliament scenario, big mess.
Yeah.
But we're going to wake up.
But it would still be better than the Conservatives being. Yeah.
Yes. So the best.
Much better big mess than.
The best realistic scenario. It's not our ideal vision.
The best real. The
but
most,
the best realistic scenario is Labour winning a majority for us.
Maybe. I don't think that's realistic. I don't think that's
so what
a realistic outcome. I think the most realistic outcome is the hung parliament. We've just been discussing.
Okay, so we'll be here in 5 years' time after, you know, 89 episodes of Dithering on the Edge of Europe.
Well, if we can still afford to.
Oh, no.
So, we'll see.
Okay, that's it for now.
Okay.
Right. So, that's our...
Yep, that's the podcast this week. Not a rosy outlook on life, unfortunately. But we've just got to stay tough and keep fighting.
Exactly.
Basically.
Which means there will still be a need for a podcast. So if you enjoyed the show...
No, we'll put our happy voices on again. Okay, go ahead.
So if you enjoyed the show, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcast or your favorite podcast player, because it does really help others to find us.
Feel free to follow us on Twitter on Dithering on the Edge or at Dithering E.
Goodbye for now.
And have a great week. Bye. Oh, bye. And vote wisely.
Vote wisely. That's it. Bye-bye.
Bye.